Would you put your hands together and welcome Zeke this morning? God bless.
Well, good morning. Wow, this is a special place. I mean, geez, I got goosebumps. I should have wore a long sleeve shirt. I got goosebumps being in here. And it's so obvious. It's so obvious that the Holy Spirit is just surrounded in this room right now, and I'm just so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for this opportunity to be here. I'm so grateful to be alive today. Amen. Because God knows that, you know, I was just a matter of seconds away from ending my own life. I was just a matter of seconds away from death multiple times. And it's only by the grace of God, it's only because He's got a greater plan than my own plan that I'm here today. And I'm truly grateful and truly thankful for that. You know, I travel all over the country and I speak. And before I get speaking, I want you to know that the offering that we'll collect in a little bit, it was going to go towards my ministry, but unfortunately my dad was going 85 and a 60 on the way here. So now that'll be going to pay for our ticket and our citation that we got this morning. So we'll blame that one on him. No, but really, it's that's a true story too. That really happened. Sometimes God's just trying to tell you to slow down a little bit. I'm grateful to be here. You know, whenever I go to a church, I'm always trying to figure out, you know, do I share my story, or do I preach my message, or do I preach a sermon, or what is it that God's wanting me to share with the people? And so I prayed long and hard about it, and I realized that God's telling me this morning, just share your story with these people. Amen. To share your story with these people, and through your story, you know, God will work, and God will do what He does. And, you know, my story starts a long, long time ago. You know, I grew up in a strong, loving, two-parent Christian home. My grandpa's been a Baptist minister for 70 years. He's still preaching. He'll probably die in the pulpit, or he'll die on his Harley, one or the other. But I grew up in church, and from a young age, like, church wasn't an option. It was mandatory. Sunday morning, you woke up, you went to church. You know, there was no other option. My dad played 13 years in the NFL. He played for the Buffalo Bills. He's actually one of 22 men on this planet that played in 4 consecutive Super Bowls. He's also one of 22 men on this planet that lost 4 consecutive Super Bowls. So I kind of grew up in a losing family, so it was kind of a lose-lose situation from the beginning for me. But no, I'm very grateful to have the parents that I have in my life. I'm grateful for the family that I have. But I grew up, and like I said, I grew up in a strong, loving, two-parent Christian home. Was raised in church, was raised with very strong values to do the right thing. But from a young age, there was something inside of me that was just rebellious. There was something inside of me that, like, you know, if mom was like, "Hey, Zeke, the stove's hot, don't touch the stove," when mom turned her head, I wanted to see if the stove was really hot. I didn't believe mom that the stove was really hot. That's just who I was as a kid. You know, from a very young age, I really struggled with, like, acceptance. Where do I fit in at? Who do I hang out with? And from the outside, it looks like Zeke's got it all together. Here's this kid that grew up. He grew up in a nice house. He's got nice clothes. His dad plays in the NFL. You know, surely they got money. So from the outside, it looks like Zeke has it all together. But from a young age, Zeke was just lost. He was just broken inside. He was just alone. And so I remember, you know, trying to figure out, like, growing up into elementary school, like, who do I hang out with? Do I hang out with my church friends because, well, I knew mom and dad had no problem with me going over to my church friend's house? Do I hang out with my sports friends because, to me, I played football, basketball, baseball growing up? That's probably who I fit in with. Or do I hang out with the kids who are ding-dong ditching, egging houses, running around the neighborhood with the cops spotlight on them? Because to me, as a kid, like, that was fun. That was fun. And so I remember, you know, from a young age, just really struggling with acceptance, really struggling to find out where I fit in. I seeked my whole life for validation. I seeked my whole life for affirmation, for acceptance from something or somebody. And as I began to grow up and as I began to play sports, I realized that I found that validation in sports. I was always the best player on the team. It was always, Zeke, you take the last shot. Zeke, we want the ball in your hands. Zeke, pat on the butt, you're good enough. So I found that validation from a very young age in sports. But as most of you know, you can't play sports 24 hours a day. There comes a point in time when practice is over and you got to go home. And so, yeah, it was great when I was at practice and I had that validation, that affirmation that I needed. But when I went home, I struggled to find that. You know, I had something really, really tragic happen to me when I was 10 years old. When I was 10 years old, I was molested by a man. When I was 10 years old, I had what seemed to be the grossest, the sickest, the most violated thing that could ever happen to me. How could this happen to me? How could this happen to me? By a man? Oh, nobody will ever find out about this. I will never let anybody find out about this. Nobody will find out. If anybody finds out about this, I'll be judged. I'll be considered what the world would consider that. I will be considered just disgusting in so many people's eyes. And so for me, at 10 years old, I was molested by a man, and nobody was ever gonna find out about it. I took that secret and I buried it so deep inside of me that I swore nobody would ever find out about it. Definitely not Dad, because if Dad finds out about it, he might be locked up for murder for the rest of his life. Nobody was going to find out about that. That continued on up into, and you know, I told myself, you know, surely if I bury it deep inside of me enough, you know, I'll forget about it. I'll forget about it. So I remember 10 years old, that happened to me, and you know, I began to question. You know, 11 years old, I accepted Jesus in my life. My grandpa was a Baptist minister. I told you that, and to me, it was like, I wonder if that water's hot or cold. I just want to get up there and go under and then come up and everybody cheers for you. And I was like, man, I guess that's the right thing to do. But I had no idea that when I made that decision that day to accept Jesus in my life, I was in trouble. Because look, when you make that decision to accept Jesus in your life, no matter how far you run, no matter how far you run, he will never, ever leave you. No matter how distant he may seem to you in your life, he's always close enough to be there for you. And so I remember I made that decision at the age of 11, and I was thinking, you know, if I accept Jesus in my life and I come down and they say you come up and you're washed and you're clean, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe, just maybe, if I accept Jesus into my life, maybe I'll forget about this deep, dark secret that I have. Maybe that'll just clean me. Maybe that'll just remove that from me. So I go under and I come up and everybody claps and I accept Jesus in my life and I begin to, you know, try to walk with the Lord and begin to, you know, do the things necessary in order to live a Christ-like life, and I still couldn't get rid of that secret. I mean, it was just in my stomach. And it was like, just I would forget about it for a couple weeks, and then all of a sudden it'd be like, bam. Oh, man, and I would just be full of just emotion. And so I get up into middle school, and I told you, you know, I really struggle with validation and affirmation and trying to find acceptance from something or somebody. I remember being 13 years old, and see, Mom and Dad didn't drink, didn't smoke. There was no alcohol in their house. There was no drugs. There was no tobacco, nothing in the house. Mom and Dad never drank, never smoked their entire life. And so to me, I remember from a young age, like, I'll never, ever drink or smoke because Dad doesn't drink or smoke. Dad was a successful NFL player. If I ever want to reach my dreams and my goals one day of following in Dad's footsteps, surely I can't do that either. But I remember I would, like, go to my friend's house, and I'm like, man, yeah, their parents just, they're not normal. Like, they drink a lot. Or, like, why do they have so much liquor in the house? And I remember, like, my friends are kind of like, you know, oh, yeah, you know, it's just a normal Friday, Saturday, Sunday thing. You know, they just drink. It's what they do. And so then they start stealing beers. And they start drinking beers. And they start stealing Mom's cigarettes. And I remember thinking to myself, like, that'll just never be me. Like, that, I can never get involved in that stuff. I just don't want to go down that road. It's just not the right thing to do. And so I remember 13 years old, I'm in seventh grade, and I told you if Mom said the stove was hot, I just wanted to touch it just to see if the stove was hot. And so 13 years old, I'm walking home from school one day with a buddy, and I remember I used to hear about, oh, so-and-so smoked weed for the first time this weekend, so-and-so drank for the first time this weekend, and I remember just curious, like, why are they doing it? Like, there must be something that is enjoyable, or there must be something, some reason why they're doing it. 13 years old, I'm walking home from the park one day with a friend of mine, or walking home from school, and we cut through the park, and I remember seeing a group of high school kids down in the woods, and I'm thinking to myself, like, they're not just down in the woods just, you know, playing cops and robbers. They're down in the woods doing something. And I was the curious kid that was going to go down in the woods and find out what was going on. And so I walk down in the woods, and I see them passing around what looked to be a cigarette, and I'm like, I know that's not a cigarette. And so I walk up, and it was like before I know it, I had this joint handed to me. And here I am, 13 years old, with four other 16-year-old high school kids, and I have this decision to make. And oh, I just wanted to be accepted, though. I just wanted them to like me. I just wanted to fit in because, I don't know, maybe if I just take a hit one time, maybe they'll like me, maybe they'll invite me over later, maybe I'll have a new group of friends, because I truly didn't know where I belonged at. So 13 years old, 7th grade, I made a decision to take my first hit of marijuana. You see, I had no idea because I told myself that day, I'll only try it one time. I'll never cross that line. I'll never even drink alcohol. But I'll try it one time. I can say I tried it. You know, you can't make fun of me for not being cool enough or never trying it. So I took my first hit of marijuana at the age of 13. And I remember when I took that hit of marijuana, I was like, dang, these guys like me. Like, maybe I fit in with these guys. Maybe I fit in, you know. Dad, can I have $20? We're going to go to the movies and you know, whatever. Yeah, sure, son. You know, no parent thinks their 13-year-old kid smoking marijuana. But there I was from the time that I was 13 years old until that I was 22 years old, I smoked marijuana every single day for those 9 years. Every single day. And I told myself, though, you know, I'll never cross that line. You know, I see it all over Facebook and all over the music videos and in the movies, you know, so it can't be that bad. You know, it's legal in California and Colorado. It can't be that bad. It can't be that bad. I mean, it's just a little marijuana. And so I told myself, like, I'll never cross that line. That's all it'll ever be. That's all it'll ever be. You see, I found something to kind of block that secret that I had inside. You see, I remember I would take a hit of marijuana and I'd be high for a few hours. And I remember for a few hours, I wouldn't think about that deep, dark secret that I had. I wouldn't think about it. And so this progressed on up in through 8th grade and into high school. And you see, I told you I was a halfway decent athlete. I played running back and linebacker. Okay, so for those of you that know a little bit about football, I played running back and linebacker growing up through Pee Wee and through middle school. And I get to high school, and I'm 6'4", 220 pounds. And coach comes to me, and he's like, look, Zeke, I know you're the best athlete on the team, but you're just too big to be a running back. He's like, there's just not many 6'4" white running backs. And I'm like, yeah. Okay. And I'm thinking he's going to tell me, like, we're going to move you to offensive line. And I'm like, coach, I'm getting ready to quit football if you tell me that. Like, not me. And he says, Zeke, we want you to play quarterback. And I'm like, oh, that sounds great. Like, quarterback? Look, if y'all don't know anything about sports, everybody in this church right now knows what the quarterback is, okay? And so I'm thinking to myself, like, quarterback? Oh, perfect. Like, this is perfect. Like, man, I'll get all the girls. I'll get all the attention. My picture will be in the newspaper. Man, everything will be great if I'm the quarterback. Everybody loves the quarterback. And so I had no idea, though, that when I accepted, you know, kind of that role on the football team to be the quarterback, that it was going to launch my future. You see, I remember dreaming as a kid, I want to follow in Dad's footsteps. Dad's got a pretty cool job. He goes and plays football for a living. That's a pretty cool job. I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I want to follow in his footsteps. I want to play high school football. I want to have an opportunity to play college football. And someday have an opportunity to go play in the NFL. You see, I had no idea that those dreams would someday become reality. I had no idea that those opportunities would present themselves to me. So I take over on this quarterback position, and it kind of takes off, And after my freshman year of high school, I have 15 Division I scholarship offers. As a 16-year-old freshman in high school, sophomore year, I have like 25. And by the end of my junior year, I have over 70 Division I scholarship offers to every school in America. Literally every school in America. I mean, every Nick Saban, Les Miles, Urban Meyer, every big-time college coach was coming in school to recruit me. That wasn't very common where I lived. That was not very common. So I went from this humbled kid to, man, I'm telling you, my head was so big, I wouldn't have been able to walk in this church. I mean, my head was big. No humility whatsoever, no humility. And so I remember being in high school, and you know, I got in and I started drinking a little bit, and like I told you, I continued to smoke marijuana, and you know, I never thought it would be a problem, but I always realized I didn't drink like a normal person. I didn't just smoke marijuana like a normal person. Like, if I smoked marijuana, I was going to smoke it all day. If I drank, I was going to drink until I woke up the next morning. That's just how I was. And I never realized I had an issue until later in life. To me, it was just like, oh, you know, this is what we're supposed to do. We're high school kids, you know, the red solo cup, beer pong, you know, get in the car with the boys and just smoke a blunt and go on the back roads. That was like, I guess this is what we're supposed to do. You see, I just wanted to feel normal. I just wanted to feel normal. And I struggled in high school. I mean, here from the outside, it's like, oh, this is his five-star quarterback, the number one football player in the state of Kentucky, the number two quarterback in the country. There was one quarterback in front of me in high school, Jameis Winston, who won the Heisman Trophy and went on to be the first draft pick in the NFL, plays for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There was one player in front of me. And so here it is from the outside, like, man, this guy, he's got the life. But man, I was so broken inside. I was so lost. I was so alone. I just didn't know where I belonged. I didn't know who accepted me. I made this decision when I was 11 years old to accept Jesus in my life, but I never opened the Bible since I was 11. I went to church on Sunday, not because I wanted to, because I had to. I prayed every now and then, you know, when I had a test and I wanted a pastor, I prayed before the game that God would let me, you know, go out and perform well tonight. But I never truly prayed for God's will to be done in my life. I never truly prayed for, like, God, you know what, if it's your will, let it be done. And if not, then you know what? Cool. I trust you. It was never that. It was always, God, give me this. God, give me that. God, can I just please have a little bit more money? God, can I just please have another scholarship offer? God, can you just please give me this girl or that girl? I never prayed for anything that, God, let your will be done. Never. And so I remember I was so sick of being in high school. I was so sick of all this attention. You know, I loved it, but I hated it at the same time because I just wanted to be normal. So me smoking marijuana and me drinking, that was a little bit of me feeling normal and just being able to be a normal high school kid. I made a decision to go play for Auburn University. At the time, Auburn was the number one team in the country. They just won the national championship. Cam Newton was the quarterback. Cam Newton won the Heisman. And they're sitting here telling me, like, Zeke, you're the next Cam Newton. You're going to go to Auburn. You're going to take us back to the national championship. You know, you're going to win the Heisman 3 years. You're going to the NFL. And I'm thinking, like, oh, cool. Say no more. I'm coming. You see, I decided I was going to graduate high school early. I needed to get out of high school. I needed to go down to Auburn. Maybe I could kind of start over, go down there and start making some better decisions because I clearly wasn't making good decisions in high school, and I was afraid somebody was going to find out who the real Zeke was, that the real Zeke wasn't this five-star All-American quarterback, that Zeke really had a drug and alcohol problem, that you know Zeke really wasn't as dedicated as it looked like to his athletic ability and his sport, that he really was just blessed and talented, and he kind of took advantage of that. You know what? I took advantage of the ability that God gave him. I took advantage of the ability and the gift that God had given me. And so I get to Auburn. I graduate high school early, and I go down to Auburn January 2012. And I get down to Auburn, and I remember being down there, and I'm thinking, you know, I got to come down here. I got to turn it around. I got to get my life together because now I'm this big-time college quarterback. I got to get it all together now. I got to get it all together. Oh, I'll go to church on Sunday, and maybe, you know, that'll help. But Monday through Saturday, you know, I'll just go do what I want to do because, you know, I'm a college kid, and I'm a college quarterback now. And, you know, I got to look like the big guy on campus, and, you know, I got to have five or six different girls I hang out with, and I got to have the nice shoes and the nice clothes and all the material things, all the things that the world tells you need to have. And I remember getting down there, and, like, I literally didn't even want to hang out with my teammates because – I was afraid my teammates were going to, like, judge me. I was afraid my teammates were going to be like, dude, you got an issue, man. Like, why do you drink so much? Like, what's wrong with you? And I remember getting down to Auburn, like, the first day or two I got down there, I made this list of goals that I had. And the first thing I put on the top of the list was keep God first and surround yourself with the right people so that you can make these goals reality. And I put that real big in parentheses on top of this paper. Keep God first and surround yourself with good people so that you can make these dreams reality. And then I went down and I list and I started writing, oh, I want to be the starting quarterback at Auburn as a freshman. I want to win the SEC championship. I want to win a national championship. I want to win a Heisman. I want to be a first-round draft pick. I want to be the first. Look, in all caps where I wrote, keep God first and surround yourself with good people so that you can make these dreams reality, I couldn't even fulfill that. And I wonder why I couldn't make these goals become reality. And so I get into spring ball, and I'm telling you what, I didn't work out in high school. Like, I was just kind of, I told you, it was a God-given talent that God had given me the ability to play football. I never worked out. I was just gifted. I was talented. I was blessed. And so I get down here to Auburn, and, like, I'm waking up at, like, 5 in the morning and going and getting my butt kicked. I mean, like, what am I doing? I'm supposed to still be in high school right now. I'm supposed to be in, like, rec sport gym class right now. And I'm up here at 5:30 in the morning getting my butt kicked. And so finally I got through the winter workouts and we get into spring. And finally I got to throw the football. Like, I'm here to throw the football. Like, that's why I'm here, to throw the football. Like, quarterbacks, we're not supposed to get hit. We're not supposed to do anything hard. Just give us the football, let us throw it, and then take pictures of us and give us all the attention. Like, that's what we were supposed to do. I was the quarterback. I didn't know I was supposed to lift weights and run sprints and do all this stuff. I didn't. But I realized real quick, you know, like, the quarterback actually has to do a lot more than everybody else. And I finally got into spring ball. And I worked my tail off, man. I worked my tail off. And you know, being down at Auburn, I, as soon as I got down there, I told you I kind of distanced myself from my teammates. And I started hanging out with some other college students on campus that I really had no business being around. I continued to smoke marijuana. I continued to go out and drink. But hey, hoot with the owls and soar with the eagles. I would go out at night and I would have a good time, but hey, I was going to be up early in the morning and I was going to show out. I was going to perform because that's why I was there. As long as nobody found out about it, I was good. Spring ball comes through and I told you I wanted to be the starting quarterback at Auburn University as a freshman. And man, I had a really great spring. Really, really good spring. And I remember 2.5 weeks of spring come to an end and I sit down with Gene Chizik, who's the head coach at Auburn at the time, and he's like, we have our spring exit interviews before we get some time off for the summer. He says, Zeke, look, September 13th in the Georgia Dome in the Chick-fil-A Classic against Clemson University, you're our starting quarterback. And I remember thinking to myself, like, wow. Okay, here we go. Here we go. The time is now. Now this is everything I've ever wanted now. I earned that starting spot. And I walk out of that exit view, and now, man, I told you my head was already big, but now my head was like twice as big as it was before. And so I remember thinking to myself, like, you know, I can continue to smoke weed. I continue to drink. I continue to run around and treat girls crazy. I continue to do what I want to do. I can't get in trouble. Look, I'm too good. My talent, it doesn't even matter. My character. I'm so talented, I don't even have to have character. And so I remember I make a decision one night to go out with some friends. We're just going to go out. We're going to have a couple drinks. You know, just maybe smoke a little bit, you know, nothing crazy. And one thing leads me, I told you I didn't drink like a normal person. So I come out of a blackout, and I'm walking back to my dorm, 18 years old. I remember kind of opening my eyes, the red and blue flashing lights. I'm putting handcuffs, and I'm thrown in the back of a police car at the age of 18. And I remember I'm in the back of this police car, and I'm thinking to myself, come on, God, for real? Like, really, God? Come on, man. I went to church on Sunday, last Sunday. Like, what do you mean? Why are you letting this happen to me, God? And so here I am, like 18 years old in handcuffs, in the back of a police car, getting hauled off to jail, the starting quarterback for Auburn University. And I remember, like, this is the time when, like, Twitter, I know some of you guys are probably like, what's Twitter? But this is the time when, like, Twitter and Instagram and, like, social media is, like, blowing up. And so I remember thinking to myself, like, man, I really hope nobody finds out about this. Like, if people find out about this, the real Zeke's going to be exposed. Like, they're going to know that Zeke's not really this good kid that comes from this good Christian family, and his grandpa's a preacher, and he's an All-American quarterback, and he's got it all together. They're going to realize that Zeke is not as good of a kid as it looks like he is on the outside, that Zeke might have some issues on the inside. And so I remember I wake up the next morning, and I get bailed out of jail, and Coach comes and bails me out. I'm in his car and from the police station, and we're headed back to my apartment, and he looks at me, and he says, Zeke, we want you to go into your apartment. We want you to clean yourself up, call your mom and dad, let them know that you're okay, and we'll call you in a little bit, and we'll let you know what your future is here at Auburn. And I remember thinking, like, wait a minute, you're going to let me know what my future is here at Auburn? Like, are you trying to tell me you're going to get rid of me? Come on, man. Like, I was the number two quarterback in the country. You're going to get rid of me? And he's like, we'll let you know what your future is here. Go in. And I remember as I'm walking up, I get out of his car and I'm walking up to the apartment. I remember, like, my heart starts beating. I'm thinking to myself, like, what is wrong with me? And I remember I'm thinking to myself, like, I really hope nobody finds out about this. And so I walk up, and the first thing I do when I get in my apartment is I turn it on ESPN. And the first thing I see is my face on the front of the screen. Auburn freshman quarterback arrested for public intoxication. And I remember my heart just drops in my stomach. I'm like, God, for real? Come on, man. Look, God, you already let me go to jail. Now you want to embarrass me? Like, now you want to let the whole world know? I'm thinking, like, come on, man. And so I start thinking, like, man, I don't know why. Like, I can't deal with this guilt and shame and this embarrassment. Like, and I start reading about myself. I'm on Google and Twitter, and I start reading about myself. And I'm thinking, like, man, I'm full of guilt and shame. Like, instead of hitting my knees and being like, God, I need to come back to you right now. Like, instead of doing that, I was like, you know what, Satan, I know what I need. I need another hit. I need another hit, another drink. 2 hours after I get bailed out of jail, 18 years old for a public intoxication charge, I'm in my dorm room smoking marijuana with a beer in my hand at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, thinking that that might just solve my issues. That might just fix my problems. Not hitting my knees and going to God and say, God, you know what? I'm not living my life the way I need to live my life. I need to come back to you, Lord. I know I've been distant from you, God, but I need to come back to you. I said, Satan, come on. Come on, Satan. Let's hang out, man. And so I get a phone call about an hour later, and I'm sitting in my dorm room just out of my mind, just miserable. And I get a phone call from Gene Chizik, who's the head coach at Auburn at the time. And he said, Zeke, look, we're going to let you go. Okay, we're going to release your scholarship. We'll let you go wherever you want to go play. But, you know, we think it's best that you go ahead and just find somewhere else to play. And I'm like, all right, whatever, coach, cool. I don't care. I don't want to be here anymore. You don't want me, I'll go to Alabama then. If you don't want me, I'll go to Alabama. And I pack my stuff up, and I head back to Northern Kentucky, and this is July of 2012. And I remember I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, somebody's going to call my phone. Somebody's going to call my phone and tell them they want me to come play for them. Like, they have to. Do they know who I am? And so, like, the first 2 weeks of July go by, and, like, my phone doesn't ring, and I'm thinking to myself, like, what's going on? They must have the wrong number or something. Something's not right. Third week of July. For those of you that know anything about college football camp, camp for college football starts August 1st. So I'm thinking to myself, like, I have to be in school somewhere by August 1st. I have to. I'm not going to a junior college. Do they know who I am? Like, I can't go to a junior college. I got to go big time. I'm big time. And so the last week of July of 2012, I get a phone call from Charlie Strong at the University of Louisville. And he's like, Zeke, look, man, we know you've had some struggles. We know you've had some issues. We know you have some things that we're willing to work through with you. But we want to offer you a scholarship. We want to offer you a second chance to come here and play football for us. And I remember I'm thinking to myself, like, well, I really don't have any other options. Yeah, coach, I got like 50 other schools calling me, but you know what? I want to come to Louisville. So I'm like, hey, coach, you know what? Sounds good. I'll come to Louisville. I pack my stuff up, and I head down to Louisville. And he says, look, but before anything, Zeke, I want to sit down and talk to you. You see, when I went home for the summer, I didn't go home and get my life straight. I didn't go home and try to clean my act up. I didn't go home and try to get some help. I didn't go home and try to get right with God. I went home and hung out with Satan some more. That's what I did. I thought that was going to fix it. That was going to solve my problems. And so here I am. I pack my stuff up, and I head down to the University of Louisville, and check this. The first 5 minutes I walk in on the campus, I walk into the athletic complex, the first 5 minutes, coach hands me a drug test, and the first 5 minutes I'm on the campus of the University of Louisville, I fail my first drug test. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I probably just blew it before it even got started. And so I walk up and I sit down in Coach Strong's office, and he's like, look, man, you failed the test. But look, I expected you to fail the test. I expected you to fail the test. But look, Zeke, today things are going to change. You're going to do it my way or the highway. That's strike one. He's like, Zeke, man, don't you get it? Don't you get it, Zeke? If you can just clean your life up, if you can just focus on yourself, on school, on football, in 3 years, you're a no-brainer, top 25, first-round draft pick, multimillionaire. If you just clean your act up, Zeke, all right, whatever, coach. Cool. Sounds good. And he's like, hey, by the way, Zeke, I don't care that you were the number two quarterback in the country. We have the best quarterback in the country here right now. I don't know if I have any Louisville fans in here, but Teddy Bridgewater was the quarterback at the University of Louisville at the time. And Teddy Bridgewater plays quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings now. And he said, Zeke, we have the best quarterback in the country right now. So we want to move you to tight end. And I remember thinking, as soon as he said that, I'm thinking, tight end. Tight end. Hey, man, the cameras won't be on me no more. I won't be the face of the program. I won't have to worry about anybody snapping pictures of me drinking on the weekend. I won't have to worry about anybody snapping pictures of me smoking. Hey, I can really, really go out and do what I like. You know what, coach? Tight end sounds great. Sounds good. Sign me up. Sounds good. And so that's what I did. I walked out of his office after he just told me, if you get your life straight in 3 years, you're a no-brainer, multimillionaire, top 25 draft pick. I walked out of his office that day and went right back to the one thing that I was good at, the one thing that I thought was going to solve all my problems, the one thing that I thought was going to continue to bury that secret I had deep down farther inside of me. Another hit, another drink, that was going to fix it. That was going to solve all my emotional issues. That was going to solve all the guilt and shame and embarrassment that I had from what happened at Auburn. That was going to solve all my issues. And you know what? I was able to do that for a year. Look, check this. The same time I meet this girl at the University of Louisville, cheerleader at the University of Louisville, I mean, this girl, I was like, wow. She's really, really pretty. Like, this might be the one. This might be the one. I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't know, though. Like, I know I'm handsome, but, like, she might be too good for me. And so I remember pursuing this girl and thinking, maybe we could have a relationship. And our relationship takes off. She becomes, like, my best friend. We begin dating. You see, there was only one thing about this relationship. There was only one thing. It was not good. Yeah, everything was good, but this one thing. As much as I like to drink, as much as I like to get high, as much as I like to party, she liked to drink, party, and get high that much more. You see, but she was a cheerleader, and I was a football player. So you know what? From 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., we were all athlete. But from 5:30 until sun up, we were off and running. And so our relationship takes off. But I'm back on the field, and things are going great, and I'm starting, I'm catching passes, I'm scoring, I'm producing. I'm 19 years old, I'm a freshman, and I got a third-round draft grade. Third round as 19-year-old freshman. I'm thinking, like, everything's good. We go beat Florida in the All-State Sugar Bowl down in New Orleans and January 2013, and like Louisville is like the hottest campus in the country. Our men's basketball team just wins the national championship. Our women's basketball team loses in the national championship. We win the Sugar Bowl. Like, Louisville is the hottest campus in the country at the time. And so everything's good. Hey, Zeke's not getting drug tested yet. Zeke's continuing to go out and do what he likes to do. He's got this girl now, and now they're getting high together. Now she's got all these friends that all my friends are hanging out with, and we're partying. Everything's great. Into the 2013 season, we're 7-0. Week 7 of the 2013 season, we're 7-0. We're number 5 in the country. The University of Louisville is in the talk for playing in a BCS national championship game, number 5 in the country. And I hadn't been drug tested in almost a year. And I wake up at 6:30 in the morning and I'm thinking, oh, man, who's knocking on my door at 6:30 in the morning? And I get out of bed and I walk over and I open the door and I answer it. And there's my trainer and my coach standing at the door. My coach has a piece of paper in his hand, and my trainer has a cup in his hand. And he's like, Zeke, man, you've been selected for random drug tests. We need you to pee in the cup. And I'm like, oh, man. Really, God? Come on, man. I just went to church like a month ago. Why are you doing this to me, God? I don't understand it. Like, what more do you want? Like, I pray like once a week, and, you know, every now and then I'll turn on K-Love, but why, God? I don't understand it. And so, no, that was my thought process. And so, I fail my second drug test at the University of Louisville. And coach calls me later that afternoon. I'm thinking, like, man, I don't know. Is he going to kick me out? Is he going to kick me off the team? Like, what's going on? He calls me, and he says, Zeke, look, here's what we're going to do with you. When you pass the drug test, Zeke, you can come back and play. But until you pass the drug test, don't come to the facility. You know, you don't come to the complex. You're not working out. You don't have study hours, nothing. Until you pass the drug test, you're not a part of this team. And so I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, perfect. I'll quit smoking weed for 30 days. I'll quit smoking pot for 30 days. I'll pass the drug test. I'll get back on the field, and I'll go back to doing what I like to do. Look, you can take the blunt for me, but you're not going to take the bottle, coach. You can't test me for alcohol. You can't drug test me for alcohol. So you know what? You can take the, go ahead, have the blunt for 30 days, but you're not going to take the bottle. About a week goes by, and I go out the following weekend, and I hadn't smoked for the first time since I was 13 years old in a week. And I mean, I started to kind of feel better, and I'm thinking, like, man, maybe this ain't so bad. You know, maybe this isn't so bad. And I go out with some buddies of mine. We're going to go out and just have a couple beers and, you know, just be normal college kids. You know, they had about 4. I had about 14. And I come upon this acquaintance of mine I had, and it's actually somebody I used to buy marijuana from. And he's like, hey, Zeke, man, you haven't called me in a while. What's been going on? And I'm like, yeah, man, I had to quit smoking, you know, I got to pass the drug test, sorry, man. He said, nah, look, cool, guess what? I'm like, what's that, man? He said, look, I quit selling marijuana. I'm like, oh, great, man, congratulations, man, it's good stuff, man, great to hear. He said, look, I got something better. I'm like, oh, man, I told myself a long, long time ago I would never cross that line. I'll never cross that line. You know, marijuana is just, I won't cross that line. That's all I'll ever do. And he said, man, just try it. Look, it only stays in your system for like a day or two. And as soon as he said that, I'm like, what is it? And I hold my hand out and he drops a pill in my hand. And I'm looking down at it and I'm thinking to myself, like, I told myself I can't do this, man. What's one time going to hurt? It's not going to kill me. What's one time, you know? I said, well, what is it, man? He said, it's called a Xanax bar. Throw it in my mouth, swallow it, blackout, wake up the next morning laying in my bed. And I remember thinking to myself, like, man, I completely forgot I was molested when I was 10 years old. I completely forgot that I'd embarrassed myself, my family, my friends, my community at Auburn. I completely forgot I even got kicked out at off. I completely forgot that I was suspended from the football team. Hey, man, that's, you know what? I have anxiety and I have depression, so maybe I need those. Maybe I need those. And so I call that guy back. I wake up the next morning, and 30 minutes after I wake up, I call the guy back, and I said, hey, look, man, I need as many of those as I can get. An hour later, I have a bottle full of 200 Xanax bars in my pocket. And you see, I told you, I wasn't just I'll have one type of guy. So one led to two, and two led to four, and four led to six, and I spent the next 3 weeks in a blackout. No idea what's going on. Didn't go to class. You know, I just no idea. No idea at all what's going on. 3 weeks go by, and it's Friday night. And I have a drug test on Monday morning. A drug test for me to get back on the team and go play back with my football team, who now is 10-0. 10-0. Friday night, I go out with some of my teammates and Danny and some of her teammates, and I have this brilliant idea. Like, you know what? I'm not going to drink tonight, guys. Nobody knows I'm taking these pills. I'm not going to drink tonight. Hey, guys, I'll be the DD. I'll be the DD tonight. Sound, you know, count me. You guys drink. You have a good time. Do what you want to do. But I'll drive tonight. I'll take some pills. And I'll drive tonight. But I won't drink. And so we go out. And that's what I do. And I start eating these pills. And the next thing you know, it's like 4:30 in the morning. And Danny's like, hey, you ready to go back to the apartment? And, you know, I'm tired. And I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to go back to the apartment. I'm really tired too. And she's like, okay. And so we walk out to the car. And I get in the driver's seat. And she gets in the passenger seat. And we take off for the house. And, you know, I'm just, like, fighting to keep my eyes open. And I'm, like, fading out and just, and I wake up and I open my eyes and there's glass everywhere. And I remember, like, I'm trying to move my feet, but my feet are pinned under the dashboard. And I remember I'm trying to open the door, but the door is literally pinned in shut. And I remember I can barely see because there's just glass all over me. And I remember all I'm worried about is if Danny's okay. And I look over in the passenger seat, and all I can see is this telephone pole in the middle of my car. And I'm like, Danny, are you good? And she's like, yeah, I'm good. Are you good? And I'm like, yeah. And look, I could literally see out of the front of the car, and there was no windshield, there was no hood, because the car was split in two. And I have a telephone pole in the middle of the car. And so the ambulance get there, and the firemen get there, and the police get there, and they cut Danny out of the car, and they put her on a stretcher, and they take her to the hospital to make sure that she's okay, and they cut me out of the car, and they put me in handcuffs, and they take me to jail. 19 years old, I'm arrested for my first DUI. And so I remember I wake up the next morning, and I'm sitting in this pink jumpsuit in this isolation jail cell on the concrete floor next to this toilet. And I remember I hear the jail cell door pop open, and an officer walks in, and he's looking at me, and he's shaking his head. And he said, Mr. Pike, I had to come see you because I've never seen a vehicle so destroyed in the 13 years that I've been an officer. He said, when they told me that they took you to jail, I didn't believe them. So I had to come see you. He said, son, God's given you a second chance. God's given you a second chance. I don't care if you're a good football player. I hope right now you get your life together. I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to hear it. In through one ear and out the other. And so I get bailed out about 4 hours later, and I look at my phone, and I have a missed call from Charlie Strong, who leaves a voicemail and says, hey, look, Zeke, your scholarship's no good here anymore. That's strike three. Unfortunately, we have to let you go. You need to go find somewhere else to play football. I remember thinking to myself, well, it's Saturday. I was supposed to have a drug test on Monday. You know what? I don't have a drug test anymore. Let's roll one up. Give me another one of them pills, and let's get this thing going. And I was off and running again. You see, I didn't even care that I had nearly just killed myself and my girlfriend in a car accident. I didn't really care that God had spared me life and given me a second chance. The only thing I cared about was another hit or another fix. And I was off and running. And then we had this brilliant idea. Me and Danny were like, you know what? I think Louisville's the issue because, look, not only was I doing Xanax bars, but Danny was doing Xanax bars too. Not only was I destroying my life, but Danny was destroying her life too. Not only was I broken or lost alone in a frame, but Danny was too. And so we had this brilliant idea, like, you know what? Louisville's got to be the issue. It's not Zeke. It's not Danny. It's not the drugs. It's Louisville. Louisville's the issue. Babe, we got to get out of Louisville. We got to get out of Louisville. And so we make this. We have this idea that we're going to go to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. We're going to get out of Louisville. We're going to go to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. So 6 days later, we get in the car, and we drive down to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. We go out that night. We have a couple drinks. We smoke a little bit, we take a couple pills, and I wake up the next morning and I'm back in jail 7 days later for my second DUI. 7 days, 19 years old, two DUIs within a week of each other, two of them. And I remember thinking to myself, like, whatever, you know what, this is who I am. I'm a waste of life, I'm a waste of talent, I'm a waste of opportunity. God, I don't even care about you anymore. God, I don't even want you anywhere near me anymore because it's all your fault. You continue to let these bad things happen to me. Why me? Why me? Poor, pitiful Zeke. So God, you know what? You go do your own thing. I'm going to go do my own thing. And I was off and running. And I wake up about 3 weeks later. I had no idea what week it was, no idea what month it was, no idea what day it was. I wake up and I walk out into my apartment living room, and my whole family's sitting in my living room. Mom, dad, brother, sister, grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, family, friends. And I remember I'm thinking to myself, like, first of all, you guys got to go. I don't know what you're doing here, but you guys got to go. And my mom looks at me and she said, no, Zeke, you need to sit down. And you know, when mom hits you with that tone, like, okay, mom's not, she means business. And so I'm like, oh gosh, what's going on? You know, I'm thinking they're getting ready to tell me something really bad happened. So me and Danny sit down on the couch, and mom looks at me, and she's got tears pouring down her face. And you see, I was so numb, I had no emotion, no emotion at all. And my mom looks at me, and she says, Zeke, you have an option today. You can either get on an airplane today, we're going to fly you out to California, and you can we're going to enter you into a treatment program. You can help get your life back together, maybe have an opportunity to play football again one day if you choose to do that. If not, just to get your life back together. Or two, we're done with you. You figure it out on your own. But don't call home, don't come home. You know, you pay for your school, you pay for your house, you pay for everything on your own. And I remember thinking to myself, like, that's not an option. But I can't leave because I can't leave Danny. Because, I mean, I know I'm struggling, but she's really struggling. And then I remember thinking, well, you know what, if I ever want an opportunity to help Danny get her life back together, I'd have to get my life back together first. So I say, you know what, Mom, Dad, you know what, I'll make you guys happy. And that day I got on an airplane and I flew out to California. I spent the next 5 months out in California at a treatment center. The first time since I was 13 years old, I had a glimpse of what it was like to be clean and sober. For the first time since I was 13 years old. 7 years, I'm 20 years old now. First time at the time, I was 20 years old. First time in 7 years, I had a glimpse of what it was like to be clean and sober. And I remember I had been out there for 5 months and I had worked up enough time to go home and go home on a home pass to see my family. And I remember, like, I was so excited to go home because, I mean, I felt like a new person. Like, my body had come back. I had kind of started to get back in the Word of God. I was praying every day. You know, I began to kind of reconnect my relationship with God. And, you know, things seemed to be going really good in my life. And so I get on an airplane and I fly back to Northern Kentucky. And I'm so excited to get home because, look, I have not hugged my mother and looked my mother and father in the eyes for 7 years because I was afraid they were going to look me in my eyes and they were gonna see my eyes were bloodshot. They were going to see my eyes were glazed. They were going to know I was high. And I was afraid to hug them because I didn't want them to smell liquor on my breath. For the first time in 5 years, I was able to go home and be a son again. I was able to go home and be a brother again. I was able to go home and be a productive member of society again. And I get home, and man, we did all kinds of things together. The first night we get home, I mean, I get off the airplane, and we go straight to church. And I'm in church, man, and I'm worshiping, and everything's going good, man. And I mean, the Holy Spirit is just climbing on my back. And I remember, like, man, oh, this is awesome. Like, we went to Kings Island. We went to the Reds game. We went golfing. We went and did all these fun things together. And 8 days fly by. Danny spent all 8 days with me and my family. And, you know, I thought she was really struggling, but she seemed like she was doing okay. She seemed like she was doing okay. And I wake up on the 8th day, and Danny says, hey, do you mind if I run back to Louisville and get some clothes? I'm going to run back to Louisville and get some clothes, and I'll come back up. And I'm thinking to myself, like, no. She's like, do you want to come with me? And I'm like, man, look, you know Mom and Dad didn't let me go to Louisville. And I'm like, you know, you go down there, and come on back up tonight, you know, and we'll spend the last 2 days here before I have to fly back out to California. So she gets in her car and she heads back to Louisville. And it started, I mean, hours start to go by and the sun's starting to go down. And I remember thinking, like, is she coming back tonight or what? And she calls me and she's like, hey, Zeke, would you care if I just came up in the morning? And I'm like, no, I mean, I guess that's fine. She said, like, you know, I don't like to drive in the dark. You know, I'll set my alarm for 9:30. I'll wake up early and I'll get in the car and I'll come up there and spend the last 2 days with you. And I'm thinking, like, all right, that sounds good. Good night, sweet dreams. And I woke up the next morning at 9:33. I'll never forget that time. Why 9:33? I have no idea. But the first thing I did was look at my phone. Because I'm thinking, Danny said she was going to set her alarm for 9:30. So surely I'm going to have a missed call or a wake-up text or something. And I look at my phone and I have nothing. And so I text her and I'm like, hey, you up? No response. And so I call her and it rings and no answer. And I call her like 3 or 4 more times, and it rings, and no answer. And you see, Danny was that type of person that it really didn't matter if it was like 4 in the morning. She would hear that phone ring in the middle of her sleep, and she'd wake up and answer it. And so I'm thinking to myself, like, man, something's not right. But maybe she's in the shower, or maybe her phone's broke, or there's got to be some logical explanation of why she's not answering the phone. And so I text her roommate, and I'm like, hey, have you heard from Danny? You know, no response. And so about 30, 45 minutes go by, and I haven't heard anything from her. And I'm starting to think, like, man, something's just not right. And I get this phone call about 45 minutes later from a 502 area code. It's about 10:30 in the morning. 502 area code, which is Louisville's area code. And I'm thinking, like, oh, great, this is her. Something happened to her phone. I'm like, hey, what's up? You up? Mr. Pike? Yeah. Who is this? Mr. Pike, do you know Danielle Cogswell? And I said, yeah, that's my girlfriend. Who is this? Mr. Pike, this is the police chief at the University of Louisville. Mr. Pike, we found Danny dead in her dorm room this morning. I said, what? She said, Mr. Pike, we found Danny unresponsive in her dorm room this morning. And he hung the phone up on me. And I remember thinking to myself, like, what? What do you mean? But why? But I'm 5 months sober, and I'm 5 months clean, and I mean, God, I'm praying every day, and God, I'm living a life that, you know, seems to be pleasing to you. Like, God, why? God, why me? Like, are you serious? Hold on a minute, God. Like, why are you doing this to me? Why? I'm a good person, God. Why me? Why? Why do you let these bad things happen to me? Why do you continue to let these bad things happen to me, God? You know what, God? If you want to, you know what? You keep playing that game. I know somebody who will be there for me. Hey, what's up, Satan? 5 months clean, 5 months sober. I was back running the day she died. Back running. Like I never left. 22 years old, Danny made a decision one night that she was just going to try something. She was going to try a line of heroin.